This episode is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/driveanddish. Again, that is audibletrial.com/driveanddish. We also have a link on our website, driveanddishpodcast.com.
This is the Drive and Dish Podcast, talking about NBA news, stats, and fantasy.
Part of the Almighty Baller Network.
You haven't even started yet!
The Drive and Dish Podcast.
We start right now!
You know, I feel like we've complained about this before, and it's not really complaining because it's more sympathetic in this situation. But, man, we had our whole show finished today. It was good to go. We were getting ready to talk, continue our season preview. And bam, 2 hours before we were recording, big news out of Charlotte. Justin, Nick Batum, elbow injury.
Yeah.
It's not good.
Yeah, man. So at first when it happened, it came out and they were saying like the full year. And I was like, I mean, come on. Like the season hasn't even officially started. Why is the dude out for the whole year? I get it. It was his arm and stuff like that. But now it's down to, I think, last I saw is like 6 to 8 weeks potentially. So, you know, he'll be back this season. And then obviously he was talking about it on his social media, saying thanks for the support and messages. I truly appreciate that. You guys are the best. But I guess then he was getting some reports were getting messed up. He said, it's my left arm. Everybody knows I'm not using my left hand. We have a deep roster and we'll be fine, which it sucks because the Hornets, that was like the storyline last year. They were plagued with injuries.
Yeah, and Batum really in particular has been plagued with the injury bug over the years. And, you know, he just said that they're deep and that it's not going to matter. You know, I think it being 8 weeks helps the Hornets out, but the Hornets, I don't think, are as deep as he thinks they are. So I think that's going to be tested early. But again, being in the Eastern Conference, that can help them survive this. And, it starts creeping into like that 12, 13, 14 week injury rate or injury like radius and window. Then we might be in some trouble. But
and you know what was weird? You know, because I was thinking the same thing. It's like, man, Batum's got this injury bug around him, but it hasn't, like, shown up on, I guess, games played, really. I mean, 14-15 season, he played 71 games. Two years ago, he played 70, and last year he played 77. It's like these little ones that just kind of bug him. But then again, with Nick Batum, he's always like that silent killer. Like he was averaging like 15 points a game and close to six assists, almost seven rebounds a game. Like he's a silent killer out there when he's putting up stats. But yes, I mean, I agree with you in terms that I think the Hornets are deep, but that's a good amount of production you got to find a way to replace.
Yeah, we'll see. The Hornets have always been one of those teams that, you know, I thought the Hornets would be in the playoffs in the East. I thought they'd be one of the lower seeds, though. So, you know, that will open some windows. It'll be interesting. But, our best goes out to Nick Batum. Hope he gets better sooner than later. You know, we want to see him on the court. Great all-around player. But you know what else we think is great all around? The Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Welcome. My name is Kevin Rafuse. Usually joining me to my left is my co-host, Tim Tompkins. Tim is not with us tonight. But behind the boards, keeping us honest as always, our producer, Justin Kuzart.
I've already, I guess, given away my tweet, but it's thanks for the support and messages. I truly appreciate that. You guys are the best. That's from Nick Batum.
You picked a Batum tweet when we talked the whole intro about him?
Well, it was like, it was timely, you know? It just literally happened like an hour or two ago.
It did. The best laid plans go awry sometimes, as some multiple wise people have said over the years.
I completely agree. But one of the things that would really help us at the start of this NBA season is for some new fans or new basketball fans to the podcasting world is if you leave us a review of how you feel about the podcast, 4 or 5 star, preferably, helps us the most. But it really does help new podcast listeners find if they're interested in the show or, you know, maybe they got some questions about the show. You can answer them in the review. Just leave us one real quick on iTunes. And of course, we will give you a shout out on the show next week.
Hey, Tim here from the Drive and Dish podcast. And so listen, I get it. You're sitting there, you're listening to the podcast through your headphones right now, and you're thinking, how can I support this podcast for all the content they're providing and get something for myself? Well, myself, Kevin, and Justin, we have the answer for you, and that is Audible, a free audiobook. All you have to do, To get your free audiobook is go to audibletrial.com/driveanddish. Again, that's audibletrial.com/driveanddish. You get a free audiobook just by going to that link. And look, if you want to get some basketball knowledge put into your headphones, not just by us, but some basketball books out there, there's some great ones on Audible right now. You can get Basketball and Other Things. You can get Beyond Basketball, Coach K's Keywords for Success, How to Be Like Mike, Life Lessons About Basketball's Best. On next week's episode, I'll tell you some more free audiobooks that you can get by going to audibletrial.com/driveanddish. Again, that's audibletrial.com/driveanddish. Or if you forget that, just go to driveanddishpodcast.com and we'll have the link up at the top of the page.
And like we said, we are continuing our season preview. So much like our last two episodes, we're going to be bouncing questions off each other. Justin and I have 10 questions that we're going to answer for you guys today, talk about all different topics. So I guess question number 19. We'll keep it Hornets themed. With the Nick Batum injury, Kemba Walker is noticeably better alongside Batum. Will Steve Clifford have to change the offensive scheme to adjust, or will the combination of Jeremy Lamb, Malik Monk, and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist be able to fill the ball movement void?
I love this question, and it's a Tim Tompkins question, so we'll give him the credit here. But I really love the idea of giving these younger guys a shot now. And that's not me saying that I want Nick Batum out. But if you look at Jeremy Lamb's numbers from last year, he was only playing 18 minutes. So if you look at his per 36 numbers, because you would assume he's going to see some more minutes coming his way, 19 points per game, 46% field goal. Not that great from three, but neither was Nick Batum. So we'll just kind of skim past that part. 8 rebounds, 1 block, and 1 steal. So the only thing Jeremy Lamb technically isn't making up for Nick Batum in that aspect is the assists, which is, you know, obviously Jeremy Lamb's not Nick Batum. Jeremy Lamb's only 25 years old and still developing into this league, although I love giving him the shot. Nick Batum last year played most of his minutes. I think it was almost 60% of his minutes at the shooting guard position, which is where they want Jeremy Lamb at. So I think it's an easy just like plug and play type deal where you can still have Michael Kidd-Gilchrist at the small forward doing his defensive thing. And then Malik Monk, I think he can come in and give some production, but like he's a rookie, you know? So like it's hard to say what he's going to do in the league. He's still developing. So I think the best shot is giving Jeremy Lamb the minutes and letting him shine through like he's proven he can through his per 36 numbers.
Yeah, you really hit everything on the head. That was great. I'd like to see Lamb get the shot as well. I think it's going to be interesting this year because it feels like with Jeremy Lamb, going back to even when he was in OKC, he's always been intriguing, but he hasn't really been given the shot. Mm-hmm. Now with the injury, like you said, he'll get more of a shot. I also think, to your point, this is going to open a lot more of a role for Malik Monk right away, mm-hmm. somebody who I still think is a really good prospect. I was excited on the kid coming out of college. It was disappointing we didn't get to see him most of summer league with all the injuries, or really all of summer league. It's still a bit TBD with Malik Monk, and again, to like your point, I think he's a rookie, so I think there's always that rookie learning curve. So I don't think we can expect him to adequately fill those minutes. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist always has kind of left a little bit to be desired on the offensive end, an excellent defensive player, we know mm-hmm. that, so at least there's that value. I think he can replace Batum in that element. I think they're going to be missing Batum. I think Steve Clifford, to the original question, is going to have to adjust a little bit. But at the same time, I like giving the young kids a shot, and I think there will be opportunities here to, you know, maybe Steve Clifford will tailor it around their games a little bit more. But I like that we're going to get to see their games early on in the season.
I would also say I wonder what the game would have looked like, or the game plan would have looked like, now that Dwight Howard's there. That slows it down a bit for them, although I don't think they were the fastest paced offense last year. But I mean, you know, I think the offense was going to look different from the year before anyway. So I think this will be totally fine. I know they were a plus 3.7 to Tim's question in the very beginning. Kemba obviously better with Nick Batum. They were plus 3.7 when he was on the court. So yes, that's true. But again, like I said, I get excited for these younger players to come in and prove themselves. And I think Jeremy Lamb's in a position where he can do that. I just need to see it. I didn't realize I was so passionate about the Hornets until right now, apparently.
I love it, dude. This is some I didn't know you liked the Hornets this much. This is great.
I didn't know I liked them either. I'm just really excited to see what Jeremy Lamb can do. I started a hashtag on Twitter, and by started I mean I tweeted it once, and it's hashtag let Lamb loose. Ready to see him. I picked him up in our fantasy league. I'm ready to go.
Dude, I love the Justin Cousart all in on the Hornets wagon. I also love that hashtag, and that definitely needs to become a thing.
We'll see what happens. So we'll move on to our next question, which is number 18. The Miami Heat missed the playoffs by a half game last season, which was actually like some crazy stuff by the end of the season if you were still paying attention, which was likely a result because of Deion Waiters' injury that he missed the last 13 games. You know, they were playing well above 500 ball at the end of the year. So can the Heat home court advantage take them into the playoffs next year, or what would be their goal? So should it be to simply make the playoffs next year, or should they have a higher ceiling than that?
I guess I'm kind of in between with this. Well, let me answer the first part. Do I think they're going to get home court advantage? No, I don't. I think there are five teams in the Eastern Conference who are definitively better and who are above kind of the pack of everyone else, mm-hmm. to certain levels of an extent. Those are Cleveland, Boston, Washington, Toronto, and Milwaukee. I think they're all a little bit ahead of everybody else.
What about, now, wait, did you say the Raptors? You said Toronto.
Yes.
Sorry, I'm just making sure.
Yep. No, I think, you know, I'm not a huge Toronto guy. Like, not, well, it's not that I'm against Toronto. It's just that I think this team isn't that good, and I think they're going to continue to fall off this year. Like, I'm just disappointed in the Raptors more than anything.
They play so well during the season, though. It's more of a playoff thing, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, that is true. They've been an excellent regular season team over the past few years.
I mean, they were tied
years.
With
There's
the Cavs, technically, you know, last
yeah,
year
no,
going
absolutely.
Into... So, I don't know.
But, you know, I do think they've taken a step back, but we're not talking about the Raptors. We're talking about the Heat. I think the Heat are going to make the playoffs. I think their goal should definitely be make the playoffs. I think a success for them is anywhere between probably 5 and 8. I realistically, if I'm a Miami fan, would like to see them around that 6 or 7 level. Especially with the Hornets with that injury, that opens up of, you know, they can get off to a hotter start, no pun intended, you know, get a few games up early. So, but yeah, I think the goal is definitely the playoffs this year for Miami, and I think they will make it.
Something that I found super interesting about the Heat. So last year, post All-Star break, we're not going to count the Warriors because their net rating is something like 11, which is just like, it was like, here's the league, and then the Warriors are way up here. So
it's almost as if they're a super team.
Right. So not counting the Warriors, the Heat had the number one spot for the net rating. They had a 5.6, which was better than Spurs, Blazers, Clippers. And I'm talking like, it's a good stat. They were 9th for offensive rating at 109.3, 6th in the league for defensive rating, 103.7. They turned it on. They had 46% from field goal. They had 38% from 3, which was actually 5th in the league. Like, this team was no joke, and they were really making this push. I think it would definitely be a disappointment if they are not in the playoffs next year. I don't see them gunning for it. Like you said, I don't see them gunning for anything like the Cavs or the Celtics spot, I guess, realistically. But I think they fight with the Hornets for that, like, 5th, 6th. Maybe we get lucky and we see them fighting, like, Wizards or Raptors for that 4 spot, depending on where it goes. But I don't think it's going to be much higher than that. I think ceiling, the very best season they have, is a 4th seed. And I think, you know, bottom is they're still in the playoffs at like 6 or 7, maybe even 8, and that would be disappointing to me.
I'm absolutely ecstatic if I'm a Miami fan and I get the 4 seed in the Eastern Conference, even with how weak it is. Like, I am through the roof happy with that season.
But you look at it, so what, a 4th seed last year was 49 wins. The Heat had 41. And they didn't play phenomenally in the beginning of the year. So, you know, you get a few of those beginning game wins and you win 8 more games. I mean,
sure, but are they going to be that as good as they were in the second half for the entire season?
I guess that's what we have to see, you know? That's what we got to find out. Is Deion Waiters' play a fluke, you know? I mean, when he was out those 13 games, that's what really did him in.
Well, the Heat are extremely well coached. They all play a great style of basketball. They get contributions from everybody. They have a solid starting lineup. They have a decent amount of depth. So, like, they'll win games. They'll be competitive. As I said, I think they are a playoff team. I just, you know, in the grand scheme of things, I don't think the talent level is there compared to some of the elite teams in the Eastern Conference. They don't have a John Wall. I love Hassan Whiteside, don't get me wrong. But, like, the Heat don't have a John Wall. They don't have a Giannis. They don't have, obviously, a LeBron James. And then with the Celtics, with Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward.
They have a Waiters Island, though.
They do have a Waiters Island. And the Heat beat the Warriors last year, so that's something. Gave us that iconic Waiters gif.
That's what I'm saying, man. So, I don't know. Don't sleep on the Heat. I think a lot of people are thinking, they were just okay last year. They missed the playoffs. I think there's something to this team. I'm interested to see where they come from out of the gates.
All right, question number 17. We're going to talk about the Knicks. With Carmelo Anthony gone and Michael Beasley seemingly sliding into that scoring role, along with Enes Kanter from the trade, what would define success as a season for the Knicks, and what would define failure?
This is definitely a Tim question. I love it. You can totally tell he wrote it, because, like, when I first read the question, I was like, wait, is this serious, or what's going on here?
I feel like Tim was laughing the entire time he wrote the sentence, Michael Beasley seemingly sliding into that scoring role along with Enes Kanter from the trade.
Right. I was going to say, Beasley, I think he said that because Beasley made some comments before Melo left that they were going to make a run. But looking at it, I think it's going to be a bit of a down year for Enes Kanter, and I don't think you were here for this talk when the Melo stuff first went down. Me and Tim talked about it, but I think if you look at the numbers from Willie Hernan Gomez, his numbers are phenomenal per 36, and I think he was only playing like 20 minutes a game or something like that, and his per 36 was showing like something around like almost 15 rebounds a game. And then you look at it, you got Frank running the point, and then you got Chris Stapps on the side, you got Doug McDermott on the other side, and Willie down low. Like, that's so much spacing and so much room for Willie to grab boards, for Porzingis to work, for McDermott to take his threes. He's almost a 40% three-point shooter. Like, I don't know. I don't think Enes Kanter really fits in terms of that part of the question. So I think he'll get his minutes, but I think production-wise, it'll be a bit of a down year for him, unless there's something I'm missing that's like super crazy that he's going to come in and really blow it out. I think you could do something where you have Enes and Kristaps on the sides and Willie down low, though then I start to question the defense of that lineup. So I think defining a failure would be pissing off Kristaps again.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Is alienating Porzingis and making him want to leave. They got to make things good with him. I think if Porzingis doesn't develop at all, I think that could make it a failure as well. In terms of success, you know, win maybe 30 games, get a high lottery pick, do well in the draft. Like, I don't think they're anywhere near the playoffs. I also don't think, like, look, the Knicks aren't in a bad place if they're managed right. It's just the management is the problem. And you hope that they have turned over a new leaf. You know, I just got to see it.
Well, and so that's the thing. As I was talking to my roommate, he goes, man, I don't want them to win even 10 games. And I'm like, why though? Like, they have a good spot. They got Frank. They got Kristaps. They got Willie down. Like, it's a good place to be working from. I don't get the whole wanting to. I mean, I guess I do, because we're Sixers fan. We get the whole losing and getting the better player again.
Yeah.
But like, I don't get it from a development standpoint for them. Like, they're ready to start getting good habits, forming that relationship between the players, and I don't see why you can't try to get 30 games. Where were the Knicks last year? 31. I think if they could win 30 games and prove that the culture thing was just Melo, that's a win in my book.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the culture thing is Melo at all. I think it's just, if the Knicks young players develop and they're good enough to be in the lottery, ideally like a top 10 pick for me, I think that's a success. Mm-hmm. And then if they don't make any bad trades and bad signings, like, I know that's a low bar, and I promise I'm not even taking shots. I guess 30 is a success, but I feel like it's going to be it's all about getting the young talent now that Carmelo Anthony's gone. It's not about winning games currently. So it's tough for me to be like, oh man, it'd be great if they win 40 games. Cause I don't think it would be great if they win 40 games. Honestly, for the Knicks, it would be more benefit. If everybody develops and the Knicks only win 10 games, that's a potentially great.
Right. But I guess the other thing too is we just need to see where Frank's at.
Yeah, you got to. I mean, if you get good minutes from Frank Ntilikina and you get good minutes and Tim Hardaway Jr. actually takes the step that you paid him all that money for, and if Porzingis develops and is happy and doesn't want to leave New York, then I feel like it's all good. As long as, you know, you just, you know, it's tough. It's tough because the ownership and the management has just been so poor.
Our next question kind of incorporates the Knicks, so we'll jump into it. It's out of the East teams, no one expects to make the playoffs like the Knicks, and, you know, we can throw the Nets in there and probably the Magic at this point. Which one is most likely to have a surprise turnaround season, in your opinion?
I'm actually going to surprise people here, maybe. And
are you going to say the Knicks?
No, I'm not going to say the Knicks. Well, so, I mean, I don't really, they're all non-playoff teams to me. I don't really think any of them is going to surprise anybody. I think the Nets are going to be more fun to watch than people will think. And, I know everybody gets their Nets jokes off, but I think the D'Angelo Russell trade was really good move for them. Mm-hmm. I think they have some interesting young talent in LeVert and Hollis Jefferson. And, you know, with Jeremy Lin in the mix, I think that's entertaining. You know, I think if he's healthy, I think he's a better player than people give him credit for. So I think the Nets are going to be, you know, I guess I am going to go with the Nets here. I think the Magic, I mean, the Magic with new coaching maybe and with new management, but I don't think the roster is all that different from last year. So I think, you know, players playing in the right spot will help. And no one on the Magic at this point is jumping off the page to me to make me think that there'd be a surprise turnaround all of a sudden. It feels like there's still a year or two or a piece or two away.
Well, let me ask you this, though, because I was thinking about it, like a team of Fournier, Payton, Biombo, Gordon, Ross, Jonathan Isaac, Simmons, DJ Augustine, and Vuk. That's, I mean, in my mind, that could make an eighth seed. That's a good enough team that could make the eighth seed in the East.
Yeah, I just think there are a little bit teams that are better and deeper. I mean, Jonathan Isaac is still, who I think is going to be great, but I think Jonathan Isaac, or at least on the defensive end, but I think he's still very, very raw. I think he's a good 2 years off from really making any noise. You know, you hope Hezonja can give you something. I do like Fournier. You know, I'm not on the Elfrid Payton bandwagon the way you are.
I
think Aaron Gordon will be playing in his natural position more at the four, which I think helps. That'll go a long way. He was kind of playing out of position for a lot of his career at the three, which doesn't help. You know, there's definitely talent on that roster. I think Orlando probably has right this second the most overall talent. I think the Knicks have the best overall player in Porzingis of these three teams, but I don't know, man, the Nets intrigue me. I feel like they could exceed people's expectations, but for the record, I don't think any of these teams are making the playoffs.
No, I mean, I agree. I always get left down or let down by the Magic, so, like, you know, I'll leave that as it is. But I'm just saying, like, Jonathan Isaac, his first preseason game, and I know it's preseason, but he dropped 15 points. He was 6 from 10 from the field. He had, you know, 3 rebounds. He played about 30 minutes. Like, that's not terrible, you know.
No, I think you should be enthused if you're the Magic with that performance. Like, the kid has a high ceiling if he puts his offensive game together.
I mean, I agree. So I'm gonna go with the Magic based off the, I guess, experience of the players. Like, if you look at the players with the most experience, I know Jonathan Isaac's coming in, but you got Fournier, you got Payton, who's in a potential contract year, and if Payton plays like he did in the second half of last season, he's going to be averaging almost a triple-double, so I want to see what happens with him. You know, you got Biombo, you got Gordon, you got Ross now on the team, and Simmons. And Simmons is such a wild card to me because you don't know if he's a product or he was a product of the Spurs. So I want to see it from him. But I think overall, talent-wise, as a team, the Magic have it.
Yeah, well, they got Simmons so cheap that I think even if he ends up being a system player, like, that was such good value. And I think the Magic are going to be better in years to come. I think the front office hasn't been great the past 5 years. And I think they've whiffed in a few places, but I think they have a better direction now. They have new management. And I'm enthused by what they've done so far. I just think they got to, you know, you got to finesse the roster a little bit before you can take that next step.
I agree. It's a raw roster and leave some to be desired. But I think in a weak East, I could see him, and having a really good season, I could see him in the eighth seed.
Everything just really comes back to the East being weak. It's so funny every time we talk about these fringe teams. They would have no chance in the West.
Oh, not even. We would laugh at this question in the West.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you want to see what we talk about on the show in picture form, follow us on Instagram. Just search Drive and Dish Podcast.
question number 16. With the All-Star Game rule changes, does it make it more exciting? And who do you think will be captains?
I think it does make it a little bit more exciting, more or less because it's for charity and it's just a good cause at this point. But I totally feel like it needs to be LeBron and KD, and I need KD to pick Kyrie Irving, and I need LeBron to take Westbrook first. Just straight petty game. I would love that so much.
And LeBron loves Westbrook is the thing. And KD taking, you know, Kyrie, because he was at that party with the Warriors over the summer, too, where he was making fun of the LeBron workout video. Yo, the NBA is so petty. I love it.
But it totally needs to happen. And I think if you did something like that, where like LeBron actually picked a team and KD actually picked a team, like they may try a little bit harder. I mean, they'll still go into it knowing it's an All-Star game and nobody actually cares, but I still,
oh, they'll try if it's close.
Right, that's what I'm saying. If it's like, all right, I don't like this guy, I'm going to try to block him. I think that could really, really make it interesting. Who do you think is going to get it?
I think the captains are going to be LeBron and Steph. I think Steph is more likable than KD currently. Yeah. And I think of the Warriors players that are going to get it, I think it's him. I also think Steph has a massive international fan base. You know, I think LeBron is going to get it because he's LeBron, which, I mean, honestly, I'd love to see LeBron and Steph be the captains, because that's been the rivalry over these past few years. So, you know, I think that's cool. I do like the change. You know, East West is cool, but I like the, you know, they did this in the NHL and I really enjoyed it, where they picked their own teams. And, you know, the All-Star game is all about fun. They're playing for charity now, which I think is super cool. It gives you a little more incentive to win. All the money's going to a good cause.
Yes.
Like I think the All-Star, you know, the All-Star game itself, we've talked about in recent years, it's been the least cool part of All-Star weekend.
Yeah.
I don't watch for the game. I watch for everything else. So, you know, now with this, I'm a little more intrigued, because I think, again, you could have those situations where, you know, maybe guys will take it a little more personally and want to show off like who the real best players
are.
Well,
like you could see it, like LeBron takes Gordon Hayward and KD takes Gobert. You know, you get these like players that abandon each other and you just get this interesting little storyline there. I really think it'd be funny, but yeah, I definitely agree with you on it's going to be somebody from the Warriors. There will be one of the captains will be from the Warriors. I just don't know who it is going to be yet.
Yeah, I mean, I could see KD as well. Like, don't get me wrong, KD is the second best player in the game. He's a huge star. I mean, I would. It's all about the combinations for me. Like, I would like to see Russ and KD be the two captains.
Yeah.
You know, there's a few others, but I'm all about this. I think it's great.
All right, we'll move on to our next question, which is about coaches. Is there any coach in danger of losing their job potentially before the season is over?
I think the one that comes right off my head, which we talked about, I think, at the beginning of the summer, but I think Alvin Gentry.
Yeah.
If the Boogie pairing doesn't work with Anthony Davis, they haven't really been successful. Since they've had Davis, obviously he's a transcendent talent. So there's, you feel that pressure to be success. I think he's the one that immediately comes to mind. I think that there's pressure on him to get, start getting some of these wins sooner than later. You know, there's a few other, honestly though, like it was pretty stable last year. And as I look around the league, you know, I think Fred Hoiberg that will have some pressure in Chicago. It feels like he's been on the hot seat for a while, though. Again, I maintain that I don't think any of the dysfunction in Chicago is necessarily Hoiberg's fault. But regardless, I do think there will be some pressure on him. Also with Detroit, with Stan Van Gundy, they put a lot of money into that roster. And with him being the president of basketball operations and the coach, I think there's double the pressure there. And I don't even necessarily think he'll get fired for being a bad coach. It's more of, I think he would be fired because of the front office stuff.
I was going to say, I saw a lot of people talking about Stan Van, where they're like, say what you want about the dysfunction or the struggles of the Pistons, Stan Van is still a great coach. And I'm like, all right, well then take away some of his duties. Like what they did with Doc. I think that kind of puts Doc on a hot seat a little bit as well, in terms of he lost some of his duties so he could focus specifically on coaching. And if, say, for example, the Clippers are struggling, I could see some eyebrows starting to question. It's like, yo, Doc, like, what's going on? Like, you know, this is your main job now. You don't have any other duties. You are the coach. So if you're not focusing on this or it's not working, I could see them starting to raise some question. But I agree with you, Alvin Gentry. If the Cousins and Davis pairing isn't working, I think Alvin Gentry is going to feel the heat for sure.
Question 14. Let's get that crystal ball out. Predict two story headlines that we will see at some point this season.
I can guarantee this one. There will be a chemistry in Boston issue headline. I don't know how it will be worded, but at some point during the season, we will get a, is Boston not working? Is Kyrie and Gordon Hayward not working? Like, we will get that at some point. They're going to go through a weird, like, losing streak or something, and we will see that headline for sure.
It'll be, like, 20 games in, yeah, because everybody always overreacts when teams that haven't played together ever, and especially with Boston with all the new faces.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to take a while to click. It doesn't happen overnight.
It happened with the Cavs last year, remember?
It happened with the Cavs last year. It happened with the Warriors after the Christmas loss last year. It happened with the Heat back when they formed, like... It takes time to gel.
Right. So I definitely think that's going to be one of the headlines. What's one of yours?
I think one is going to be some drama with the Cavs at midway through the season. Like, they're going to be tired and annoyed, and it's going to be like, LeBron James is doing this, so he's definitely leaving.
He's subtweeting again.
Yeah, subtweeting, or like, he'll have moved in an office building or something, yeah, or he'll have like bought something in LA or said something about how great Magic Johnson is, and everyone is going to freak out.
There'll be some kind of ball headline where, you know, Lonzo Ball or LeVar Ball getting too involved with the coaching staff or something like that. But another one I that always seems to pop up with James Harden is like his co-star and him not getting along. So like it happened with Dwight Howard, remember? There was all like James Harden, Dwight Howard hate each other. So I could see if the Rockets start having a little bit of trouble, there could be the Chris Paul and James Harden not getting along or not seeing eye to eye in the locker room or something like that. But I will say from their preseason games, they seem to be vibing pretty well. So
yeah, I don't know why everyone thought that this was so doomed to not work right away. Like, I know Harden and Chris Paul both need the ball in their hands, but I mean, everyone thought it was going to be such a big deal and that they were going to be barking at each other and that, you know, everyone overreacted right away. And the other one I have is Boogie trade rumors. I think we're going to be seeing them all season long. If that pairing doesn't click right away, which again, they've still only played a few games together, so we don't want to jump ahead of ourselves, but I feel like we're already seeing them. So I feel like we're going to see even more and more as we get into the
season.
Will
the Cavs trade their one pick? That'll be all over the internet for sure. And we'll move on to our next question. How concerned should the Cavs be about Isaiah Thomas's hip injury?
I think moderately concerned. The fact that he's not coming back until February, you wonder about, you know, getting him into the offense as you get towards playoff. Is he going to be full steam? Is he going to be shaking that rust off? So I think there definitely should be a level of concern there. However, again, given the whole, I've always been a big backer of this trade, giving that Irving wanted out. I think they got a lot back.
Yeah.
I think the signing of Derrick Rose helps in the meantime. I also think Dwayne Wade coming in helps a little bit because he can, you know, you don't want Dwayne Wade running point, but he can play a little bit of point. And then, you know, Jose Calderon has looked decent in preseason, which has been a pleasant surprise if you're a Cavs fan. So, you know, I think that it's not until February means they don't need to fully panic, but I think it should be a level of concern. I don't want to write this off like it's nothing.
Well, I'd also say with the Cavs, like we say every year, it's not about the season as a whole. It's about postseason. It's about the playoffs. And I mean, as long as he can come back and get enough time to vibe with the team, to see how he's doing, I think it's fine. I was reading up on all the stuff they're making him do. They're like ESPN said that they've got the Cavs medical staff talked to this doctor that he's like some renowned hip specialist practicing in Cleveland. He's also consulting with like some crazy doctor out in New York, and crazy in a good way, not crazy like he's gonna do some crazy surgery on him. But you know, these guys are like high up there, and the Cavs are taking it super serious. Isaiah Thomas was saying they have him doing some crazy nutrition diet and all this stuff to make sure he's going well. I know they're making him run in like an anti-gravity area and all this stuff, so he's not running on full weight yet, but they're taking it super light and they're taking it super slow because they know they don't need him to come back until at least, you know, maybe a month or two out from the playoffs so that he can kind of start to vibe. And I think that really puts him in a good spot where he's not going to get re-injured. He can get really healthy. He's going to be fine. I think it's a concern in the aspect that that he's not there the whole season to vibe, but I think if he comes back, you know, a month or two out from the playoffs, that's enough time to kind of gel.
Yeah, as long as he's in the able to click with the guys, like you said, and, you know, spend time getting healthy and getting reacquainted, shaking that rust off, you know, to your point, Cleveland is playing for June. They're not playing for the regular season. So it's all about being 100% to try to make that run at the finals again.
Well, and then the other question being, the only part that kind of concerns me is the rest of LeBron James, and that doesn't fully fall on Isaiah Thomas. That more falls on just, now it falls on Wade and Rose to be able to lead an offense without LeBron. But, you know, I think between Wade, Rose, and Love on the court, you should be able to win some games with those guys and give LeBron James some rest.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm not really worried about Cleveland. I guess that's what it all comes down to. I think they're going to be fine, you know, ready to take on Boston in the ECF most likely. And last but not least, question number 11, one of our favorite people, Justin, does Nerlens Noel ball out, or was him turning down a 4-year, $70 million deal a terrible decision?
So I know Tim's not here, but he would be very upset if we didn't read his text message to us about Nerlens Noel. He said the Nerlens contract, even if he gets the max, it's the exact same amount as his $17 million offer from the Mavs once you take into account him playing on the qualifying offer. So he essentially Nerlens kind of got screwed over, obviously fired his people for that. But balling out, I guess we'd have to define what we think balling out is, you know?
Like enough to get that level contract again.
Well, I guess if somebody, so if you look at his numbers from last year, which he had some shooters around him, played about 20 minutes a game. He was second to last in scoring for players that played over 20 minutes a game on the Mavs. Again, I know Nerlens isn't really an offensive guy. He was third in rebounds. Obviously, Bogut not there anymore, so he does get some minutes back. But they've added Dennis Smith, so it's going to depend if they can gel. You know, I just wonder where his offensive role is going to be. Nerlens Noel is a defensive guy, and that doesn't show up that much on stats. And between Harrison Barnes and Dennis Smith, like, there's not a lot that they're going to need him to do offensively, you would assume, if everything goes right. But to the opposite side of that point, his per 36 numbers last year looked pretty good. 15 points per game, 10 rebounds a game, 2 steals, 2 blocks. Now, the question being is 15 points a game, 10 rebounds, 2 steals, 2 blocks, 4-year, $70 million in your opinion.
I mean, if he takes steps on the defensive end and continues to be elite on that in that level and reaches his full potential, I think it is just for that alone, because I think he can run the floor. I think he's athletic. I think his game translates well for the modern NBA. I agree. I think they're going to need to see a little more on the offensive end. I worry about the chances that he's going to get in Dallas now. I mean, Rick Carlisle is already talking about him coming off the bench.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like, you know, we took a little bit of the hit with the organization, obviously, with this whole situation. I think it was a terrible decision to turn down 4 years, $70 million, because I think it would have added that insurance, which is so important. I do
especially
think Dallas
for him,
had him.
He's injury prone.
Yeah, that's the thing, is there's a lot of way this can go wrong. You know, I feel bad for Nerlens Noel, because I think if he had been a restricted free agent or had been a restricted free agent the year before, I think he would have got a ton of money when everybody got paid. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, the center position was just down and the market wasn't there for other players at his level. So, you know, I thought 4 years, 70 was reasonable for the market. And, you know, when he hasn't made a ton of money yet, you know, $70 million is a lot of money. We'll see. I think it's, you know, again, he could ball out and get this contract again. I'm still a huge Nerlens Noel believer. I think he has the potential to be an elite defensive player. I think he'll always be like a catch and lob type guy.
Yeah. But
like
there
a DeAndre Jordan,
right.
But there's value in
yes,
that.
That's what I was going to say. And then you look at it and he fits the timeline that the Mavs kind of have with Dennis Smith and Harrison Barnes. Like, if you think he's part of it going forward, then maybe it's worth it to give him the money. Of course, we don't have Tim here who would be like, guys, he doesn't deserve that kind of cash. But, like, you know, everybody's getting paid. And if he fits the culture and he fits the timeline of the team and it's vibing well and you're not too worried about the injury risk, then maybe you do offer it to him.
I think there's worse things than paying Nerlens Noel $16 or $17 million a year.
I agree with you.
But I, you know, again, I do think the injury risk will unfortunately factor in. But hopefully our guy Nerlens can make it happen. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. We appreciate you guys, as always. We do have more season previews coming for you guys soon, so stay tuned for that. We're going to be continuing to ask these questions, getting all the way down to number one.
Yes, and Kevin talks with Harrison Wind this coming week about the Nuggets, so we'll be dropping that midweek for you as well. And,
yeah, really good stuff.
Yeah, please support our sponsors and hit us up on social media. You can find everything you need to find out at driveanddishpodcast.com.
I think we've done enough dancing for today, so why don't we dance Wednesday?
See you, Starside.
Okay, well, I'm out of here.
Get in the hole!
Da-da-da-da-da. Hey! Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Hey!
Let's go while we're young!
All right, I think they get the point.